This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And hello, Hearts of Oak. Thank you so much for joining us on another news review, and delighted to welcome back Mr. David Vance. David, thank you once again for your time.
Yeah, pleasure to be here as always, Peter. Always a pleasure.
We can have a natter for the next 50 minutes about all the things that are happening, never a shortage. But before we get into that, if you don't follow David, then there is his Twitter page. Make sure and follow him. And obviously on Podbean side as well, the many podcasts, but everything is available there. Make sure and use that as one of your main sources of what is happening. It will be a great resource. Let's jump on to the first story. And the first story is about geoengineering, which is a topic that I think we both discussed, or you kind of haven't jumped into massively. But let me bring up the first one. And then there's a short video which will play to show you what has been happening. Many people will have seen all of this. And this was beautiful Dubai storm today and rain. Let me bring up the video, and it's just about 40 seconds. And here it is. So, David, Dubai. It sounded like Jurassic Park sounds in the background on that.
Yeah, I think there was dinosaurs. There must have been dinosaurs in the background. Yeah, and actual fact, I mean, people are going on about this, but that actually looks like the sort of weather we get here in the UK any day of the year, basically.
Northern Ireland, anyway.
So, you know, what are they getting so excited about? But, I mean, Dubai, as I was saying, Peter, before we came on air, I've been in Dubai several times, four or five times over the years. And I really like Dubai for one reason, and that is it's a desert. I mean, just in the Emirates, sir, it's desert. And it's been developed and made into very tourist-friendly, in particular in Dubai, in that Emirate. So you go there for the sun, not to be rained upon and absolutely soaked to death, which appear to be going on there. And as I say, it's such a dry, Dubai is so dry, There's virtually nothing there. It never rains, or hardly ever any rain, except, of course, and this is the thing about this one, that we haven't talked much about geoengineering. And if you do, people up until this point would have said, it's a mad conspiracy theory. Don't be so silly. Put your take off that tinfoil hat, and it can't happen. Except it does. It absolutely does. And as I pointed out in another tweet, Bloomberg's, the major news agency, did say that, they've been doing what's called cloud seeding in Dubai since 2002. So they've been at it for 22 years, cloud seeding, because the technology exists to be able to, in a very arid environment, to be able to cultivate rain, which seems superficially like if you could do it, well, you might want to do it, but clearly with consequences. And, you know, people, again, are getting out of the tree about this one. If you go back to the UK to 1952, and Lynmouth, I think it is, isn't it?
Yep.
Down in Devon, which was a little Devon village, which there was this terrible flood. Lots of lives were lost. And you can still see, like, evidence of what happened. And I think the RAF have conceded that, yes, they were involved in sort of some form of what cloud seeding or whatever you want to call it back then. In 52, apparently from 1949 to the mid-50s, the RAF were involved in it. Well, I'm sure it didn't stop in 55. So I do think, I mean, okay, it's another rabbit hole, but I think that humanity does sort of have tech to be able to influence weather a bit. Chinese do it. Yep, there you go, Peter. Yep. RAF rainmakers caused the 52 flood. I mean, not mad. I think that's The Guardian. It's hardly a mad right-wing conspiracy theorist platform, although it's hardly a newspaper either.
But David, this is 22 years ago. This is 2001. So this isn't something that's just popped up on the scene. This has been happening. And you're right. Yeah. I saw some people, I hadn't come across that until I saw some people posting it on Twitter a few months ago and thought, wow, okay, that kind of explains some stuff. And you realize a lot of things are happening that actually we've no idea about.
Well, you know, as we talk today, Peter, in April of 24, and I look out the window, it's where I live, it's wet. It's been wet pretty much all year. It's a bleak day. And I think back to 2020, when at this point we were all locked in our homes and the weather was gorgeous outside and people were ever so happy to stay at home, not to go outdoors. And you think, that was great timing, wasn't it? The nation's locked down. We have brilliant weather. 4 years on, we're getting this kind of this dismal weather. So I think that it's a fact that we can, or some countries have the tech to be able to influence weather. That's maybe the better way. And as we've seen in Dubai, I presume it's gone wrong. I mean, I don't think the Dubai authorities who are they have to be said that the people who run Dubai are very smart people. It runs really well. I mean, it runs much better in the UK. There's a lot to be said for having a monarchical tyranny in some instances. But Dubai does run well. But this obviously went wrong. And we know in other parts of the world they do it as well. So, look, I just think it happens. It's not tinfoil hat wearing. I think sensible people would say, can we understand better? What are they doing? How does the seeding happen? Does this play into the whole chemtrails and all that? I don't know. I don't know about those things. But for sure, there are stranger things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy, Horatio. And that's how it is with this one.
Yeah. This was the story you mentioned, how cloud seeding benefit the kingdom. So 1 year ago.
They're admitting it. I mean, it's in plain sight. There is no debate about cloud seeding is the thing. It's the thing, Peter. And how widespread it is, I don't know. But, I mean, you can understand in the desert they'd want to cloud seed. Are there other things they can do? You know, or is can they limit cloud? I don't know. I don't know. But I think, you know, a lot. Who knows what they can do? But the Dubai authorities are. She showed in that little tweet. I mean, they article. They have said, yeah, we do this. Yeah, we do it. And I'm just thinking, I wonder, does the British authorities do? And then you go back to 1952 and they did. And so, yeah, you know, you gotta be open-minded in these things.
You do. And I've seen quite a number of video clips and you check and go back their authenticity with machines and discussing what you put in. They talk about just being salt and water, but big vats of something being sprayed, and depending on the size of particles means how you gather rain. If they're too big, obviously the particles seem to be slightly too big in Dubai for causing that. It is happening. It's you delve, you really do delve into it. So I know I've seen a couple of people. I think Lewis Brackpool said he'll be talking more about this. And it's, yeah, I think sometimes, David, we're in so many rabbit holes that you end up actually, I don't know whether I have capacity to take on another issue that's happening behind the scenes.
I know. I think the thing is, in Dubai, it was so strange because it is a desert and it's very, very unusual. And then, of course, you have the one of the worst twists on this is you've got the likes of the BBC then going, aha, there you go. There's your unstoppable climate change.
Yeah.
All of you climate change deniers. And in actual fact, the only reason that, and in actual, in this case, it actually is man-made climate change because they're cloud seeding. Now, the BBC won't want to talk about that bit of it, but it does show you that, yes, man can influence the climate, apparently in Dubai anyway, but which is a very small area, of course. Also worth pointing out, this is not a big geographical zone, heavily populated and all of that. But yeah, I feel bad for the tourists in Dubai at the moment. I'd want a refund.
I'd want a refund as well. Actually, just a separate thing we hadn't discussed, but just on Dubai, just touching on, I watched Pavel Durev's. Is it Pavel Durov, who runs Telegram, and he just did an interview with Tucker Carlson. Have you seen it, David? It is so, I watched the whole thing yesterday, fantastic, but obviously they're based in Dubai, but so I just want to connect the dots on that. If the viewers, listeners have not yet caught that, it is well worth it. I think it's the first interview he's done in many, many years, eight years, very private person, huge wealth. I didn't realize he started VK as well, and then started Telegram and has 100% ownership, but fantastic interview. An insight into that, an insight into an entrepreneur who's been hugely successful, fled Russia, grew up somewhere in Europe, in Italy. But yeah, I just wanted to connect those two dots because I think it's well worth watching.
Yeah, good watch. Yeah, another good one from Tucker. Yeah.
Let me bring in Ireland. So, Fine Gael have gone diverse, or the IRA. I don't know if. Now, of course, I haven't looked into all these people. They could all be second, third generation Irish. I doubt that, but here, I'll stand to be corrected. But I'm wondering if any of these people have any idea what happened in Ireland under the IRA or the issues. I bet they don't. But yeah, so I was looking through this, David, you put it up, and it had to laugh. But this is Fine Gael. Obviously one side, but everything that's happened to in Ireland, whether it's Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, and you look at this, think, have you any idea? But yeah, you put up this post, David. Were your thoughts similar?
Well, you know, the thing is, Peter, I put that up, and it did catch my attention. And all, as you say, my tweet is very measured. I just said Fine Gael, Ireland 2024. That's it. And I didn't realize it when I put that up. Sometimes this happens. The tweet goes viral and you get like gazillions of, it happens so often. I'm so used to little troll type people saying, what are you trying to say? You are a racist. How can you possibly say these people aren't Irish? Well, they may live in Ireland, but I'm just guessing that they don't probably have historical antecedents in Ireland. I think that's pretty unlikely. And the thing here as well is it's kind of funny. Fine Gael is Irish. It means I've got the meaning of it here because it amused me. Yeah, the it means tribe of the Irish, right? So I'm looking at that image and I'm thinking it's not how I associate the Irish. And then on this more substantive point, I mean, so okay, it's diversity virtue signaling. That's what it is. And but did you see that the Irish government have also provided a fund into hundreds of thousands to all the political parties to advance diverse political representation? Now, to me, that's much more sinister, that is, because that is the political establishment itself basically saying we're going to change the face, literally change the face of Irish politics. We want you. And I mean, I've seen it. All the parties, it's not just Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin have some crackers, absolute crack. Maybe that's the wrong word to use. Some individuals who would not ordinarily be what you would associate as your Sinn Féin candidate. But again, they're all taking the money. They're getting the money from government. They're going out and they're bringing these individuals and recruiting them as candidates. And you know something? It's all very well for people to attack me in social media and say, you know, I don't live in the place, so, you know, what are, who are you to talk about it? I've had loads of comments from Irish people who are grossly offended and annoyed at what at this kind of recruitment of non-Indigenous Irish, let's say. I doubt any of those people have lived in Ireland for more than 25 years. I could be wrong. I suspect not. And like there was one, sometimes, Peter, it is total clown world. I read one CV, political CV of one of these individuals. And they're talking about achievements of some of the original Irish rebels. Roger Casement. Roger Casement apparently went to the Congo or something at one point. And this individual was from the Congo. And like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm really not sure that this is what ordinary Irish people with cost of living, same issues as we all have to contend with, are really wanting. But it's what they're going to get. And this is for the council elections, which, as you know, happen in early summer in Ireland. And they've got this diverse representation. I just wonder, in these different areas of council, could they not find any? Was there no, like Indigenous second, third, fourth generation Irish? None? Just none? No?
But of course, they're following from the top, from the very top, Varadkar, being the last in every way you would think of someone leading Ireland if you go back decades. But then also, Dave, just made the point that obviously the European parliamentary elections are coming up in June, local elections coming up across the UK, Ireland, everywhere, but parliamentary elections in June. And Ireland, like the UK, are on the sidelines. You look at that and you've got Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and there's Labour in government, but then opposition are Sinn Féin, even more woke. So Ireland don't it's bad in the UK, but then you look across the world, Ireland, and it's even worse. The people have zero reason to vote, and it's a cry when you see democracy collapsing into multicultural and BS, you realize there's no representation for the Irish people.
Well, there's no established political party representation. The only thing that gives me any hope for Ireland, Peter, is that if you look at the opinion polls and you look at the people who are categorised as independents, they actually, they're polling really well. And it's a bit like the Irish people are so fed up with all the establishment, both government and opposition, as you rightly observe, they're so fed up with all of them that if an independent candidate puts himself or herself up in a constituency, they might have a chance. In fact, that's probably the only chance that the Irish people have. People who are not bought off and not part of the beast system put in place by, well, I mean, I see Ireland, the Irish government is basically a sub-branch of the World Economic Forum. And I feel bad for the Irish people. But then again, when I did that tweet, I read some of the comments. And the bit that got me was Irish people saying, but this is great. This is fantastic. This is what we've been. And either they're trolls and they're not really, not human saying that, or they're so far gone that they actually think that this new plantation of Ireland, the 2024 plantation of Ireland, which is going to remove them in due course, is a good thing. In which case, Darwinism, you know, it'll sort itself out.
Well, I just won. The first comment was Councillor Jim O'Leary. He's a Sinn Féin, or not Sinn Féin, sorry, I keep all the same, but really, all woke. Fine Gael, Fine Gael candidate, and he said, despicable post. I'm honoured to serve as local representative with these colleagues. Oh my!
He did, 1, 2, 3, O'Leary. Yeah, I say, I saw that particularly stupid comment. I did respond to it by saying everything in that tweet's factual. Yep. Stop crying about it. You know, but he's proud. This is the thing; they are proud of their own destruction. This is the thing, Peter, that those of us on the centre right of politics don't sometimes understand. Those on the far left, the regressives, as I prefer to call them, they actually revel in nihilism, their own destruction. Mm. It's really hard to understand, but they can't get enough of it. I mean, there's other stories we could talk about, but just in this case in Ireland, there is a big Czech section of the Irish political establishment yep. that is reveling in the destruction of Ireland. And I feel bad about that for my genuine patriotic Irish friends.
Yeah, there's a self-hatred that we see here in the UK as well, under the Tories and Labour.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to UK, which seemed to be good news. And then you're probably left scratching your head thinking, well, did they have rights? Paedophiles could be stripped, after 14 years of Conservative government. They could be stripped of parental rights under new law. Paedophiles convicted of serious sexual offenders, so not just the run-of-the-mill pedos, but those serious bad pedos, could lose parental rights over their children. The proposed law change comes after the BBC reported the case of a mother who spent $30,000 in legal fees to stop her paedophile ex-husband getting access to their daughter. And some Labour politicians have come together, Harriet Harman. Well, that's an interesting sidebar on this issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, tabled an amendment to upcoming legislation. David, I didn't know that paedophiles had access to children in the UK. It's just news to me.
Yeah, exactly, Peter. That was my shock in this one. What do you mean they could be stripped off parental rights? Why have they got any parental rights? The first thing that any paedophile they should be stripped of any access to their children. It's like basic 101. So I was stunned at the fact, and also, by the way, the headline was they could be, not that they would be. They could be when it gets to the family courts and stuff. I would have thought in a civilized nation, our number one priority is to defend our kids or children. And if children are so unlucky as to have like paedophile parents, male or female, then the first thing you do is you take the kids away forever from such child abusers, you know. So it just shows you that law might be might come in under a new Labour government. And then that begs the question, why wasn't it brought in under this so-called Conservative government? Where have they been? Asleep? And then, because it's all rabbit holes, I'm thinking, so this is the BBC were pushing this story as well, and they're quoting Harriet Harman. Now then, I'm sure viewers and listeners may be familiar with an organization in the 70s called PIE, the Paedophile Information Exchange, which did have connections to Labour politicians who seemed to be broadly supportive of the idea of it. And one of those was Harriet Harman, and she's on record apologizing for her, and she didn't really understand it. Okay, she didn't understand it. But this is now Harriet, who's now the defender of for children against paedophiles. Honestly, some of this is such clown world and some of it's so dark that you couldn't even make it up. So Harriet Harman, she's going to defend the kids from paedophiles, and yet she was had an involvement, an engagement around the Paedophile Information Exchange in the 70s, which was a Labour thing. So,
looking at this, that Mrs. Harman said paedophiles who were guilty of the most serious sexual offence, which is rape of a child under 13, that they would be automatically deprived. So does that mean that rape of a child who is 14 is not serious? I mean, why is it not a child under 16, under 18? But it's just under 13. So 14s are a fair game for Harriet, but 13s are bad.
Yeah, again, a very good point, Peter. I mean, this would all be solved if we had the death penalty restored in the UK, because one of the first groups of people that I would have given that judicial sentence would be paedophiles preying on kids. People like that are not of any benefit to society in any way, and we should be removing them. And if we had any moral backbone in this country, we would surely restore the death sentence for such individuals. They're grotesque. And all Harman is doing is, she says, drawing these arbitrary lines. So what, 13? Yeah, but 14? So at 14, what, you would restore parental rights then? Is that what would happen? So a 14-year-old could have the parent who had paedophilically preyed upon them being restored access. No, it's all wrong. Paedophiles, honestly, this planet would be better without them. They don't provide anything of value.
No, it's David, this simple story you could write a book on. So I wanted to put one or two other things out. So the BBC understands the Lord Chancellor, who's responsible for courts, prisons, probations, and constitutional affairs, has agreed to the amendment. So the Lord Chancellor thinks that paedophiles should not have access to children. I mean, is that news? If he said, actually, what's wrong with that, then he should be removed. But these people in charge, and they're kind of caught out in turning a blind eye to things like this. And then when they're called out, that of course I'm for it. Well, why have you not done anything on this? Why has a Conservative government not done anything on this over 14 years? Why the Labour government before that? I mean, they're so odd. Could just one... And it says, Harriet Horman, of course, is the voice of reason now, says current laws include a carve-out that protects a father's rights over his children, even if he's a convicted paedophile. My understanding was that actually men have few rights. I mean, talking to Matt O'Connor and what happens, it does seem that fathers have much fewer rights. So, I mean, there are a whole load of areas in this. Fathers generally not having access when there's a breakup, but then... that the Lord Chancellor has suddenly woken up and realised this maybe isn't a good thing.
I think it just reinforces my view that the British establishment is absolutely rotten to the core. And just on the sideline from this, but sort of half connected, I also put a tweet out earlier in the week, which went mega. I think it was 5 million views and counting. And it was concerning the artist known as... what is it? Grayson Perry, I think he is. Yeah.
I did see that.
Did you see that one?
I did. But it's too early to put that up, David.
No. Don't put it up. No, under no circumstances, go and look at it. But all my only point here would be that this is an individual who, let's say, I would have questions. I wouldn't want them in a room with children. Let's put it like that. And this individual, and there's photographic evidence, which I put up, which is beyond dispute, that this is an individual with questions concerning them. And they got a CBE in 2014. And then in 2023, last year, he got a knighthood. So the British establishment is providing knighthoods to people of extremely dubious character. Let's put it like that. And so when we get to this area with the Lord Chancellor, and none of it surprises me. In fact, you know, I just go, yeah, that's what they would say.
No, 100%. And we'll not even get into the issue of family courts and how perverse they are. We'll not even get into that. Now, let's move on to good news, bad news, but also I've got many questions, so we won't get all the questions in the next 5 minutes on this. Rishi Sunak and Belgian PM criticised Mayor's halting of NatCon conference. This was a big conference in Belgium, supposed conservatives, and the mayor had tried to kick them out, got the police involved and demanded it was shut down. Then there was legal action and the Belgian PM got involved and actually decided that, no, they were allowed to go ahead. David, tell us about this. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, this took place in Brussels, didn't it? And nothing surprises me. I mean, Brussels is, it's like hell on earth being in Brussels. I haven't been there now in a few years, and I've no intention of going back to Brussels. Brussels to me is between you've got the European Union headquarters there, and then within about 2 miles of that, you've basically got the third world. That's what Brussels is. Yeah. It's completely capitulated, as far as I can see, to all kinds of problems and issues. So, what were they thinking having the conference there in the first place? I wouldn't give my money and have a conference to a place like that. But, I mean, it's the intolerance of it, isn't it? I mean, you know, far right. In what world is Nigel Farage far right? I mean, he's not. He's, you know.
He's probably middle of the road.
Middle of the road, and I suppose sensible and all of that there. Yeah. So, you know, there was the fact that they cancelled, this is, so you and I have been up against this as well, the whole cancel culture thing that flows from the left. Yeah. They don't want to have an engagement. They don't want dialogue. They don't want argument. They used to. I'm old enough to remember way back that the left were always up for an argument and debate. They were, like, back in the 70s and whatnot. They would have been. That all changed over the last 20, 30 years. And so now it's like, no, We're going to shut you up. That's what we're going to do. So that's what they did in Brussels. And that's what they want to do everywhere to anyone who doesn't go along with what they think. And what they think is so suicidal and insane that you must speak against them. But that's where the conflict comes, you know. And so they'll not take apart Nigel Farage's arguments or anyone else's arguments. They'll just say, we're shutting you down. And we see it. And we see it like I was Brussels. But it's enough of it happens in the UK as well, where we can be shut down for just having the wrong thoughts. So truly it's Orwellian, but, you know, we know that's how it is.
Let me just pick your brains on a sidebar on that. Nat Concomer, I looked through and I thought this is basically conservative think tanks and discussion groups and commentators. I don't see much change. I don't see really anyone on that list being massively radical. They're individuals who good in their area, who run decent, I guess, think tanks, maybe write decent books. But actually, it doesn't seem to be the groundswell that kind of connects with what we expect the populist uprising that we'll have in the European parliamentary elections.
Yeah.
A lot of those politicians seem to be very much gung-ho and wanting to really fight to regain our culture.
Yeah.
This kind of seems to be a kind of soft middle slide to the right. Do you concur or am I wrong there?
Because, you know, that's exactly right. But they won't tolerate any of it. That's why this is one of the huge problems those of us who oppose leftism make. Some people seem to think, oh, if I ameliorate myself, if I just be a little, if I just be a wee bit more restrained, if I go along with some of what they say. No, you can't go along with any of it. You've got to oppose them, all of it, full on. They oppose us, everything that we think and believe. They oppose it. So we have to reciprocate with bells on, and that's the only way. There's no compromise. Peter, you understand this. There's no compromise with evil in this world. There cannot be, you know. And so when you listen to the agenda that the regressive left has, it's insanely evil. Population replacement, pro-murder up until the point of birth, you name it. We go through a litany of their points, and we have to oppose it. But some conservatives think, if I, you know, and this is the problem I have with the British Conservative Party, all of them, including Suella Braverman and including Kimi Badenoch, you know, there's areas that they want to compromise on.
Yeah.
And I don't. And they won't be given any thanks for it, and it won't get them anywhere. There can be no compromise with evil.
Yeah, 100%. Let's go on to education. And it's this which is good, but it could also be a double-edged sword. Muslim pupil loses high court challenge against school's prayer rituals ban. Muslim pupil lost a high court challenge against a ban on prayer rituals at a high-achieving North London school previously dubbed Britain's strictest. And as Catherine Burbelsing is the kind of high-profile the kind of leader of that school and been very outspoken on her views on education and doing very well in that school in Brent in Northwest London, which is a multicultural to the nth degree area in London. So it seemed good news because this obviously would allow Muslim students to get out their prayer mats in the middle of class and just pray at any time and just cause chaos. And that's not what school is for. And if your God cannot wait until you get home to pray, then there may be an issue with your God.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Listen, I think it is, broadly speaking, good news. Now, we can talk about the other aspect to it. But, I mean, look, the area of London she's in and that independent school does an amazing job in producing well-educated young people who are well-mannered and all the things that you would want. So I do have a lot of time for Catherine. I don't agree with everything, though, that she comes out with. But insofar as her job is to provide education and discipline, she does that. And wouldn't we like to see that in many other schools, I suppose. And there if Muslim students want to pray, and I have no problem with that, then they can pray before they go to school, they can pray when they come home from school. That is it, end off. So that's a good legal challenge. Then the issue becomes one. This is where it gets interesting then. Yeah, well, okay, so if we're establishing the principle that prayer cannot be part of school life, does that apply across the peace? And could someone else, could someone take a court action to stop a more traditional Church of England school from having prayer? That's the big issue, of course, isn't it? Although when I consider the sort of way those schools operate, maybe that'd be a good idea, because I think they're godless schools. I mean, that's the saddest thing, that the faith schools are increasingly faithless, which is sad. But I mean, I don't know about you, Peter. I remember when I went to school in assembly, we had prayers and hymn and prayers, and that's how we started the day every day. You know, I don't know what made a massive impression on me, to be honest, looking back in it. And really, the things that you want in school surely are the things that Catherine Birbal-Singh is pushing kids to learn, you know, decent manners, courtesy, proper education, proper learning. Is that not what we want? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. We need to fix our education system. It is dire. And having, in one way, you look back and you think, well, it's good to have a Christian school assembly. But yeah, how much does that impact the kids? Probably not much. And I know, obviously, in Northern Ireland, there are many teachers who are Christian, and that kind of comes out. And Northern Ireland has got a much better education system, I think, than England, Scotland, Wales have. But also, you've got many involved in that who are Christian, and therefore have an ethos, a Christian ethos. I think that's positive. But I think prayer, if there's prayer, that can be done at a Christian union at lunchtime. Yeah. It can be done at the very beginning of school or the end. But I think the issue on this is Muslims demand that at a certain time, Allah tells them they must pray and have to get out their prayer mat and do it. And that doesn't really fit in. That shouldn't be. And if a group of Muslim pupils want to pray before school starts, then I'm sure there's a room available for them to do that. I think that's the sensible way of doing it.
Yeah, that is sensible. But then again, you have to understand what might the motivations have been for those that Muslim pupil who took the case against the school. Yeah. I think they were trying to establish a precedent that could then again be rolled out across the country, so that any school anywhere might have to provide the facility for Muslim prayer at any point during the school day. And then that's inappropriate. That's more like that's more aggressive, I think. So I think your solution is the best one. And you know, in Northern Ireland, I mean, the other thing to say is that one of the reasons that we had a decent education system here was we had a grammar school system. I went to a grammar school, and grammar schools sort of, and what Catherine's doing with the McKellar School, and there are certain things in common. You know, there was high discipline. There was the people didn't get away with stupid stuff, or at least in my day, they absolutely didn't. But then again, the left hate the grammar school systems. In England, they've been broken up. It doesn't work anymore in England. And so I sort of see what Catherine's doing at her. That should be the template, Peter, I think, for you know, for public schools. That's how they should be. But, how do you do that with woke left-wing teaching unions and all the rest of it? It's very hard to see. But at the end of the day, the purpose of education is to provide, to make kids come out at age 16, 18, whatever it is, well-educated and with a decent set of values around them. I think she does that at McKellar, and that should be applauded. So I do, broadly speaking, support this. And I'm glad it wasn't the other way around, because the legal precedent would have been there. And boy, I mean, it could still happen. They can take another case. Yeah. And, you know, that's my take on it anyway.
It is. And just one comment before we move on is that, of course, the Muslim pupil who cannot be named, that they brought this, and it cost, I think, £20,000. And of course, the wonderful taxpayer paid for that. So the government funded an appeal against a school. It's the government working against the government, just like it happens on the immigration. But delve in that, but will not, because that's a whole other area. But it shows the stupidity of our government. Here, David, this story. So if someone is called an anti-vaxxer, then they should be stabbed to death. That's fine. Kind of how I read the Daily Mail. What, you think the Daily Mail is despicable, David? Surely not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, at least provocative tweet ever, I suppose. But no, an anti-vaxxer, he deserved all that he got. I mean, how he couldn't have been stabbed often. Well, I suppose he was stabbed not in the way that they were stabbing them in 21 in the arms. But I mean, it's a despicable headline, really. This particular, you know, cleric, very principled guy. It was a horrible event. I mean, we've seen a series of these horrible events down in Sydney, which is kind of weird. Don't know why that is. But like the last thing you should do when someone's been stabbed like that is have some, you know, Daily Mail subwriter come up with a headline like that. But they've always viewed those people who oppose the vaccine as, we've always been treated as a kind of subhuman, because we only wanted to retain our bodily autonomy. And if people wanted to take the vaccine, take it. And if they don't, don't. But Australia was egregiously pro-vaccine. And this bishop was outspoken against it, for which I absolutely commend him. He's been outspoken on other things as well. He'd be my kind of, you know, cleric to go to. I think he speaks very well. And I just hope he gets a full recovery from the stabbing.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to immigration. And it is this story. We get these figures all the time. This is from Sky News and telling us, breaking, there's no point in playing it because she just says what's on the screen. 534 migrants crossed the channel yesterday. I think I saw another tweet, someone saying it's 23% above what it was last year up until this point. But David, Rishi's going to stop the boats. I believe him. Do you not?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's got a plan. He keeps telling us the plan is working. See, I think he might have a plan, and I think the plan might be working. The only thing is, it's not the plan that people think it is. Yep. The plan isn't to stop the boats. No. The plan is to bring even more of these. And I saw the same stat as you, that I think year on year, Peter, I think we are up about 20%+.
Yeah.
Which is like staggering. This is the catastrophe that lies in store for this Conservative government is going to be immense, because, you know, all those red wall seats in the north of England, and so many just ordinary people who lent the Tories their vote in 2019 sort of thought, well, we've got Brexit and we're going to deal with immigration now. And yet you see, I mean, if you just think of that number, 534. So they'll all be staying here. They're all going to be accommodated somewhere. And the country's being overwhelmed by this. It's like the 534 one day, 200 another day. It depends on the channel conditions, which is why I thought that he would have called the general election before we got to this time, because as the weather improves, well, I'm not outside where I live, but if the weather improves in the English Channel, you're going to get absolutely more of these people coming across. It goes down really badly with the Tory base vote, and there seems to be an indifference to it. But then... That's maybe because the plan is working.
Yeah, exactly. Unwritten plan. But David, of course, there are many vacancies, especially in the Irish political system, that need to be filled. So come on.
Yeah, we need more diversity. We can't find political figures. We need to bring them. Somalia, for example, is great at providing these kind of people. But that, I mean, I just think it's a devastating indictment on where we are as a country. On a serious note, you know, we've got this under the Tories, Peter. Does anyone think it's going to be any better under Labour? Does anybody think that? It won't. It'll be even worse. And all they'll do is they'll fast-track these people through and then give them some kind of a basis to stay here. And they'll say, that's the job done. So I think we're in a battle for our country. I actually generally do believe this, because Ireland's interesting because it's a small country and you're getting all this happening. England's a much bigger country, the biggest part of the UK, but you're still getting large numbers. Yeah. And I do fear, and it's not just like, if you look at London, talk about London so much, and how the demography in London has changed to the point where I don't think someone like Sadiq Khan can be voted out, because you can't be. What if that happens everywhere? What if that happens everywhere? And this is the problem we face. And these people coming in, they're not going to be voting for the Reform Party. They're not going to be voting for Conservatives. They're going to be voting in their best interests, which are not the best interests of this country. and James Cleverley and Rishi Sunak and even Boris Johnson seems to have nothing to say about it. He has plenty to say about other things. Nothing to say about all this continued tsunami of illegal migrants crossing the channel, as well as the legal ones.
It's true, but also how evil our politicians are. You've got Boris, our government, and saying about the trans stuff. Oh, this is disgrace. Yes, we need to stop this. Well, you were prime minister. And then you got Suella Braverman stepping down and saying, you know, I tried my best, but they wouldn't listen to me. I told them what to do. Really? You were the Home Secretary, the second or third most powerful person in the UK? And you got all these politicians crying, pretending they were trying to do something, and they weren't. And then on top of that, you've got the connection with France. And I don't know whether it's just a war that the European Union and France are having with the UK, because did you hear the conversation between the boat and the French Navy?
No.
So there was audio, and there was a British container ship, and on the radio, the British container ship captain was calling the French Navy people traffickers, because he said they're just pushing the people onto British waters and then getting collected. Yeah. And it is evil what they are doing. But all of these kind of come in, and the line politicians, the scheming behind the scenes politicians actually actively, you're right, this is the plan. We're just not being actively told it.
Yeah, as you said, you summed it up brilliantly. It's the silent plan. The silent plan. And it plays into the argument of the Great Replacement. And the Great Replacement is a conspiracy theory, like cloud seeding is a conspiracy theory, like the COVID vaccines being harmful is a conspiracy theory. No, they just want to deflect us from the fundamental massive demographic changes. Like, you know, in my lifetime, what I've seen, Peter, is incredible. What you're going to see in yours is it's going to be even more, because this is being ramped up. Like, that's the other thing about it. If we had any guts in this country, I would declare war on France. That's what I would do. And the battleground can be the channel. I don't want to see the RAF flying to to take out Iranian stuff. I don't. I want them flying over the channel to make sure that every dinghy and everything that moves that shouldn't be coming here is stopped. I want that in every regard. But we won't do that. So then what we're actually witnessing is the dismantling of the United Kingdom in front of our very eyes, as you say, by lying politicians, by a conniving media. And the only people that are speaking out against it are people like us in the independent media. But at least, thankfully, we can do that.
We can. Maybe we should tell Iran that France are the biggest supporter of Israel. That may actually fix the French problem we have. But David, good news. Good news. We bring you glad tidings of great joy. The NHS Spring COVID Booster Jab booking service is open from Monday. So I believe that is this coming Monday. From Monday, the NHS will take bookings from people in England wanting a free spring COVID booster vaccine. Those eligible include everyone aged 75 or older or with a weak immune system. Or stupid. Oh, no, it doesn't say that. Sorry. But COVID is now a relatively mild disease for the vast majority. They're still pushing this, David. It's nonstop.
Oh, it's evil. It's absolutely evil. And it always was evil, this. The pushing of it into the elderly people is the worst thing I can conceive of. Yep. Well, children is also probably even worse. But elderly people, by definition, have got immune, you know, their immune systems are far from ideal, because that's what happens with age. So the fact that they want to jab this toxic brew into the veins and bodies of elderly people who already have got immunocompromised bodies, it's just staggeringly evil. And of course, never mind the fact that you know, some of these people are now in their 6th, 7th, 8th jab. I mean, and unfortunately, and I know of people who have just become, they just think this is what you do, which is, you know, yes, you get your COVID jab once a year, maybe twice a year. Although bad news for Boots, the chemists who are offering the jabs at £95 a pop. If you're really enthusiastic and you're thinking, I don't want to have one a year, I want one a month, go into Boots and they'll give you one for £95. And, you know, so you don't have to wait for you to get your booster. Plus, it's not a booster. It's not a spring booster because there's nothing different about this. Just like there was never anything different about any of it. You know my views on this. I completely dispute the entire vaccine orthodoxy. I totally dispute the fact that viruses exist. Yes, I do. And if people tune in to me next Monday night, Peter, they'll be able to listen to Don Lester and David Parker, who are excellent on this in terms of the science behind it. This whole thing is evil. Injecting human beings, treating them like lab rats for a vaccine, which even, you know, people more well-tempered than my, people like Dr. Peter McCullough is coming out and being very forthright and saying these things should be taken off the market because of the damage they're doing in all kinds of ways. And yet, no, the NHS, it's springtime and the living is easy. Come on in and we'll give you your booster. It's just like the NHS can no longer separate itself from the COVID industry. It's just become that. It's horrific. But it's what it is.
It's the power of big pharma. Been able to push, and the lobbying is frightening. Yeah. Not only matched by oil and the weapons and war industry.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that is fair. Yeah.
Well, David, let's go to Doctor Who to finish off with. And Doctor Who is maybe TV's longest running sci-fi series. And I remember watching some of the early, never really watched Doctor Who that much, in and out. David Tennant, watching Peter Capaldi and all different, and watching some of the earlier ones. Quirky to the nth degree. But there's a new Doctor.
And his assistant. Yeah.
Tell us about this, because this tweet was very popular.
God. Yeah. Again, Peter, one of my idols. I should be denied any idol moments because it never ends well. So I saw the story about the new assistant, an Indian lady. She's going to join the show in the next series. And obviously they've got the new doctor as well. And all I just sort of thought to myself was, yeah, it's garbage. I'm not listening to this kind of stuff, you know. And I'm old enough to remember the first doctor, believe it or not, when I was a very young child, William Hartnell, back in the 60s. And I remember being scared senseless of the Daleks and the Cybermen. And I did watch Doctor Who through the age of the John Pertwees, the Patrick Troughtons, the John Pertwees, then moving into it sort of went downhill. It died off in the 80s, I think. And then, to be fair, it did come back. And I was very pleased. It's funny. I was instantly called a racist on this. I'm just saying it was garbage. That's all. I couldn't care if they were green. I mean, people seem to think the Time Lord exists. Yeah. I've got news for them. It's a fictional character. It, he, she, whatever. It could be any color. I don't care. But our friend, our mutual friend, Calvin Robinson, he jumped in to this one. And Calvin, he said for him, I think it was Capaldi, was the last doctor for him. I think he said something like that.
Yeah.
And then people were saying, you're racist. And I was like, what? So Calvin was being called a racist because we won't accept the fact that, I don't, what won't we accept? We just think that the writing's garbage, the plots are garbage, and the wokery. I mean, you mentioned David Tennant there. It is interesting that David Tennant he was actually quite a reasonably decent doctor, I think, when he was doing it. But he made a reappearance, I think, in the previous series there about a year or so ago. I mean, this is how things have changed. At that point, in one of the scenes, he encountered Isaac Newton when he was in the orchard sitting under the tree. And he fancied him. Yeah.
Where do you go with that storyline?
Well, see, this is where I want the Daleks to appear. I mean, at this point, I'm on the side of the Daleks. If they would only come back and wipe out The doctor, all his assistants, all the rest of them, because it's gone on too long. We need to have cleansing of the doctor table. But it's because, of course, in the serious note, the people writing this stuff, they're all woke, they're all BBC approved. And rather than just having good storylines, I mean, I do remember many of the Doctor Who stuff. And some of it was scary, some of it was just a laugh. It was good humored. There was none of the sexual stuff, none of that. It was just kind of harmful, harmless stuff aimed at kids. And maybe that's very, it sounds very nostalgic. And you know, I'm looking, harping back for things as they were. But what I wasn't expecting when I put that tweet is there's like a million people out there who totally super duper believe that, yeah, look, he's a Time Lord. He can do what he wants. And I'm thinking, I'm not disputing that this character can do what he wants. You misunderstand what I'm saying. What I'm saying, and the viewing figures, whenever, as you know, Peter, again on Doctor Who, they moved from BBC. They had to make it, it had to be a woman, of course. Mm. So Jodie Whittaker took over, became the doctor, and women can be doctors. So she became the doctor. And what happened to viewing figures when our Jodie became the doctor? Well, the final episode of her doctoring was cataclysmically low, one of the worst ever recorded. It's almost like people don't want to watch a female Doctor Who. And I'll be really interested in seeing the viewing figures, which I'm sure they'll not talk about for this series as well. They're producing it for themselves and for a woke cult of low IQ clowns. That's who they're producing it from, rather than producing interesting, you know, mass entertainment that all the family could watch. And, you know, we don't need to be bringing in LGBTQ plus agenda. I think that's also woven into the plot lines. Yeah. Just leave it alone. But they can't. It's the BBC. And as I say, at this point, I'm 100% aligned with the Daleks.
And I think it's a normal feeling to hearken back and wish for TV that entertained and didn't have an agenda. Sit and enjoy something without actually, what's the subplot? What are they forcing me to think?
Sorry. Yeah, it's like movies. It's so much of stuff is unwatchable.
Yeah.
I don't want to be lectured to. I don't want to be, you know, having political agendas shoved down my throat. I want to be entertained if I can. And that's harder in 2024 when we have multi-channels and all the rest of it. There's less of that now than there was 50 years ago. It's kind of incredible. But that's because, of course, the whole entertainment complex is completely woke. And I suppose if they want to get the monies, the funding from the big financial houses, they have to go along with this stuff. But it is diverse garbage. And I predict that the viewing figures by the end of this next series will even beat Jodie Whittaker's abysmal period as the Doctor.
No, I think so. David, thank you for your time, as always. In 30 seconds, just let us know a previous guest that the viewers need to tune in and watch they may have missed. One of your previous guests.
One of my previous guests.
No, just what may they have missed if they
you missed so much. Yeah, you missed everything. I mean, the best one is always, I'll tell you what, I had a great chat with my pal David Scott, formerly of UK Column, out on his own now. And we had a great chat. You can check it out over on the old Rumble or Twitter or wherever you find me. On the clown world that is Scotland under Humza Yousaf and the hate crime and the protests against the hate crime and the J.K. Rowling stuff. We had a brilliant chat, one of my best ever ones. And it just shows, Peter, that, you know, there's loads of people like us and everyone watching this. There's loads like us. It's just that, you know, because we're not allowed in the media and the views are deemed, you know, offensive. But actually, most people in Scotland laugh at Humza Yousaf. And it was nice to see David talking about these things. So, and as I say, do tune in, folks, Monday night, 8 o'clock, or whenever you watch me in replay with Don Lester and David Parker as we take apart yet again the whole nonsense of vaccines.
Okay, sounds good. People can tune in and watch all of those. So, as always, thank you, David, for joining us and giving us your wisdom. Always good to chat. So, thanks good so channel. Much.
Yeah. Cheers, Peter.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list, donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.